All right, Wednesday afternoon, it is just about 3:05, into the final 25 minutes or so of the Sheldon McLeod Show. And big thanks to you guys and to our panelists. Thanks for helping the conversation move forward here today. Garth Turner joins us coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so. And, oh, my wife says she knows why it's going to take 3 months for them to pave 5 kilometers of Highway 103 from Hebb's Cross through to Italy Cross.
Why?
Because they're doing all, they're cutting all the bushes, putting in new culverts, doing a bunch of work. Then they're going to pave it. So it's not just a paving project.
Oh, well, is that good?
I guess. I don't know. Oh, it just seemed like a little bit of a long time span. You know, 3 months to do 5 kilometers of paving.
Right.
That just seemed a little excessive. But it's not just the paving. But that wasn't in the news release. So now we know.
The more you know.
Hey.
The more you
know. That's catchy. You should trademark that.
I think I might.
All right. We're going to hear from Garth Turner, who's mentioned about no more hipster cafes ever. No, just kidding. He'd made some comments and some people didn't like them, but he's bringing some development to Old Town Lunenburg at the Old Bank. The Old Bank. But right now, let's talk about a $4.5 billion Trans Mountain Pipeline purchase that we heard about yesterday. Some are suggesting this is a nationalized project in the best interests of this country to move it forward. Others are saying, but why are we paying for it? Seldom do I have a guest on the show that I have zero information or zero real idea of where they're going to go with their conversation. And this is one of those times when I really don't know what Marco Navarro Gini is going to tell us, the president of the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies, when it comes to the $4.5 billion Trans Mountain Pipeline. Marco, how are you, sir?
I am well. I am well. I'm glad to hear that I am unpredictable to you.
Well, I haven't seen you. There was no news release. There was nothing in your Twitter account to give me any idea whether you're for this or against this. So where do you fall?
I think this needed to be done in light of what had happened earlier. That is to say, the federal government had pretty much painted itself into a corner on this because they had made all the announcements and made all the decisions that led to this. Having said that, congratulations, you're now the owner of 1/35 millionth share of a pipeline.
Cool.
Like I am. You know, if you ever wanted to be in the pipeline business, now we are. But we didn't need to be, and this is a massive overspend, and it's going to be a disaster. Just to give you an idea,
yeah,
we've overpaid severely. The valuation for the Kinder Morgan pipeline, the existing one, mm-hmm. 10 years ago was $500 million. Mm-hmm. And we just paid for $4.5 billion for it. Something doesn't quite square right there.
Marco Navarro Gini here with us today. And I heard a few others yesterday describing it like you have, which is the federal government painted itself into a bit of a corner. But with British Columbia in a minority government situation, with the balance of power sitting with a Green Party member, that BC was essentially dragging its feet, delaying the process, not so sure they had the legal right, but they were able to at least slow this down. Does the province of BC bear some responsibility in this respect?
Yes, and that's the politicking part of it, of course. You know, they're a minority government, and they're in a tough spot. They have made an alliance with the Greens, and the Greens are very much in charge of the coalition, it seems, when it comes to this particular file. However, you know, the federal government has clear jurisdiction over some of these things, including declaratory powers to make things happen. And they chose not to for political reasons, too. So it's got nothing to do with policy. Basically, we are spending this massive amount of money, you and I and everybody else in this country, because the federal government was trying or is trying to protect a few of its seats in British Columbia.
If it comes down to that, that's an awful price to pay just to save a few seats.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if you are a die-in-the-wool partisan liberal, say, you know, which I'm sure, you know, many people are, and there's nothing wrong with that, it is a pretty steep price to pay. And by the way, the $4.5 billion is just the tip of the iceberg. Is for the existing pipeline. There is a $7.5 billion tag for building the extension up to the pipeline, right? And then when you look at the typical cost overrun for a project of this size, it's usually 50 to 60% on top of that. And not to count that we still have to create a crown corporation and that the government will be running it, so to speak. So, listen, did you see what happened yesterday with the Auditor General's report?
Yeah, what, the pay system?
We cannot even figure out how to pay the public servants in Ottawa, and we want to be running a pipeline company?
Marco Navarro Gini here as our guest on the broadcast, the president of the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies. Energy East failed. It did not move forward. There was some question in the market whether or not it should have happened, and it didn't happen. Justin Trudeau said we needed to send a message that Canada is open for business through the Trans Mountain pipeline purchase. Is that the message you got from that?
I am so glad you're asking about Energy East, and I hope more Atlantic Canadians ask the question about Energy East. Look, we claim that Energy East died because of market conditions. Well, you know, Kinder Morgan was going to die because of market conditions too. And so the question is, after Atlantic Canadians pretty much carpeted the region with MPs from the same political party, why was this not available for Energy East? And why isn't it? I mean, it could still be done. So if you ask the question, what region of the country needs more jobs and more of an economic boost than Atlantic Canada, then, you know, the answer is pretty clear. Why isn't that this option wasn't available for Energy East?
All right, Marco, maybe it should be just like Oprah. You get a pipeline and you get a pipeline. Is there a case to be made that maybe Energy East, the government should review that one or return to it? Maybe they should buy that one too. What the hell? Put some more money, you know, just put it on our credit cards.
Well, no, I'm not, you know, this is the part where I'm kind of saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek in a sense, but we don't need government to be running private businesses. We need government to create the right conditions and regulatory frameworks and legal frameworks for private companies to be able to do what they do. But the reality is, even if we open the Kinder Morgan, or the former the Kinder Morgan, excuse me, I'm even forgetting the name of the pipeline. Even if we opened that in 5 years, we're going to be pretty much at capacity. 400,000 barrels of oil is not all that much. The demand is going to take care of that within the next couple of years. So we need more pipeline capacity. There's no question about it.
There are groups, though, in British Columbia who say this isn't over. There are First Nations who say we will fight this to the bitter end. We will not stand down. This is a quote, not stand down, no matter who buys this ill-fated and exorbitantly priced pipeline. Is there still a chance this won't happen, do you think?
Yes. In fact, I would argue that the chance of it not happening is even greater. So we're going to be holding the bag. And here's the reasoning. Who owns the pipeline changes absolutely nothing to the demands of the British Columbia government. Even the premier tweeted that yesterday. But second, because now it's the federal government who owns it, I think that becomes an even greater magnet for more protests and more lobbying not to get it done. More susceptibility, given the seats that are at play, not to get it done. And so I think the possibilities of not getting it done just increased instead of the opposite.
We heard a comment from a man involved in, well, watching gas prices, Canadians for Gas Fairness, George Murphy, who said that, you know, this isn't unusual, that, you know, we've seen the investment in Hibernia that the federal government invested, and that turned out pretty good for at least a good part of the last number of budgets, maybe not in the last couple of years, but, you know, federal investment in made Hibernia happen. And that's a case close to us. Is there not a chance that this might be a good investment and maybe we'll make our money back and then some?
Yes. I mean, there is a possibility. But look, we're $4.5 billion already paid. We have to add $7.5 billion to actually build the extension. That's $11 billion. We have to put in an extra $2 or $3 billion to cover the liabilities of spillage and whatnot. So we're looking close to $13 billion plus the cost overruns, we could be looking close to $20 billion when it's all done. I haven't quite done the calculations, but if you look at the amount of money that you'll have to pay for toll with that kind of price, it'll be very difficult for this thing to make money within my lifetime. And then when we have to sell it, it'll be very difficult. So we'll have to sell it at a discount, and we're going to lose money.
Well, Marco, I, again, wasn't entirely sure what your thoughts would be. Glad to find out and have you on the broadcast. It was good to get you back on the show. Thank you.
Always good to be here. Thanks very much.
You take care, sir.
That's bye-bye.
Marco Navarro-Gini with the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies. He's their president and saying, you know what, little choice, but not the right choice. Paraphrasing. Okie dokie. Not a pizza shop, not a hipster cafe, but a home for his investment company. We're going to chat with Garth Turner. Garth Turner is our guest right after this. All righty. So the second episode of Game of Thrones, the Stanley Cup edition, is on tonight. I don't know how they're going to top that. I don't even know what to call it. The opening ceremonies, I guess you'd call it.
That would be spectacle.
Spectacle, yeah. From the other night. So tonight, game two goes. And I don't know. From what I heard, it was an entertaining hockey game. I know, Matt, you like basketball, so... You were kind of watching basketball, not hockey.
Yeah. I'll probably check it out a little bit tonight. I think if they want to make it a little more exciting, I know I mentioned last time maybe more archers.
Yeah.
Maybe by the end of it, maybe,
horses.
Maybe all the...
Horses on skates. That's it. That's the ticket.
Yeah. Or every person watching gets a bow and arrow. Everyone in the stands.
Oh, that sounds like a recipe for disaster. Perhaps. All right. Matt Brand, our producer. Let's talk... Oh, the CP rail strike is not going to happen. Or it's ended. Yeah. Pacific Rail, Canadian Pacific Rail reaches agreement with Teamsters to end strike. That's over. You'll find out more in the All News Afternoon headed your way in about 10 minutes. Let's turn our attention to Old Town Lunenburg. Many were rather surprised to hear that Garth Turner has not only taken up residence there, but he's also developing some of the properties. The former Bank of Montreal branch for 110 years has been closed, went up for sale. And now Garth Turner's the owner of said building. Garth Turner is our guest on the broadcast. Mr. Turner, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be on your show again, Sheldon. Thank you.
Are you a little bit surprised that people are perhaps not happy with your other hipster cafe comment?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, this is a great old building, and I bought it, and I'm having a fun time turning it into a business location. So I had a little, CBC called me up the day, did a little story on it, and I made this offhand comment, you know, oh boy, it'd be nice to have a business establishment in Lunenburg, you know, we don't probably need another hipster cafe. And I was thinking, oh, all those people from Toronto with their skinny jeans and their man buns, you know, you don't want them invading Lunenburg. But apparently a lot of people here want to be hipsters, so I got myself in trouble pretty quick.
Uh-oh. So you got to walk this one back a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I'm okay. I got a thick skin, Sheldon. You know, I've
absolutely
done a lot of things in my life, and it takes a lot to rattle me, so I'm good.
Garth Turner, this building, and I won't ask you what you paid for it, but what are you going to use it for?
Well, I'm a wealth management guy, so the business I'm involved in now is managing money on behalf of sort of middle class families across the country, and it's been headquartered on Bay Street in Toronto, and it's been, you know, very successful. But I mean, who in their right mind wants to be in a bank tower high above Bay Street, right? I would rather be in Lunenburg looking at the ocean anytime I can. So because my business has gone well, I have the luxury of being able to open an office here and spend a good chunk of my year in Lunenburg and run it out of there. So that'll be the primary function. I mean, what else would you want a bank for, right? You might as well keep money in it.
Absolutely. So do you have a residence in Lunenburg? You're not living in this building.
No, I'm not. No, I've had a residence in Lunenburg for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I've got a nice place looking at the water, so I just love spending time here. Now I have a good professional reason to spend even more time, so I think it's going to work out quite well.
All right, what's the timeline? When do you suspect you'll have things ready for opening and have your clients coming in?
Yeah, well, we've been actively under renovation now for 6 weeks or so. There's about that amount of time left, and then it should be good. It's been a pretty interesting process. I mean, this is a big old stone bank, got a big dome on the top. It kind of looks like a little, you know, mini version of a bank headquarters from the 19th century. So it's a gorgeous building. It's made out of local stone from the South Shore. It's quite unusual. And so in the process of renovating this beautiful building, we've found all kinds of old arches and swirls and swoops and things that we've restored and kind of taken out the 1960s renovation, all the banking machines and so on. I'm a big fan of old architecture. I'm a big fan of buildings. And if I have the ability to rescue a building for another 100 years, I'm a happy guy to do that.
We heard quite a story not long ago from a man by the name of Farley Blackman, and he was a bit, disappointed, he said, in the climate. How have people responded to you? How have you been welcomed into the community?
Well, it's been good. I know Farley, and I kind of know the difficulties he went through. I think his vision was maybe a little bit grander than mine, that he needed a lot more sort of real cooperation from the local authorities to get some of the big stuff done that he wanted to do. And it didn't come as quickly as he wanted. But I can tell you that the experience I've had so far has been great. Maybe there are people in Lunenburg who kind of learned a lesson when Farley left, and that is, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing to have some people come in and invest in the community. And, you know, their intentions maybe are more honorable than many people think. I don't know. But all I can tell you is my experience has been great. I've had no issues at all with folks. The town authorities have been cooperative, and people thank me a lot for rescuing this old building. And boy, that's a good feeling.
Anybody coming to you and say, hey, you, this is Opera House that you should buy? Anybody mentioned that to you yet?
Oh, yeah, there's a lovely opera house sitting here in Lunenburg that Farley has left. And I tell you, if I knew anything about putting on concerts, I'd be tempted. But to me, it's probably going to be a financial sinkhole. But it's a gorgeous building. I sure hope somebody shows up who is able to operate it.
Right. Well, I'll certainly want to stop by the old bank building when I'm in Lunenburg next. Garth Turner, just before we let you go, yesterday was a big announcement about the $4.5 billion Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, you know, like father, like son. You know, just can't keep their hands off the energy industry. It's a very intrusive move. I understand the reasons for doing it. I understand that there may be net benefits for Canada. But I think $4.5 billion is just a down payment. This thing is going to end up costing $15 or $20 billion of the taxpayers by the end of the day. And that is one heck of a lot of money to shell out. I'm not sure this is what government should do. I think it's what private enterprise should do. And government should maybe stand back and get the hell out of the way. But there you go.
No case to be made that the prime minister is signaling this country is open for business by doing this?
Well, maybe, but he's not opening a business. He's taking over a business. So I think the nationalization aspect of it is a bit troublesome. You know, the taxpayers are going to own a pipeline now, and I'm not sure we want to own it forever. And we're eventually going to have to get rid of it. So it may be a bit problematic, but it's definitely a bold move, and it changes the direction of the Trudeau government pretty substantially from supporting the environmentalists to supporting the oil guys. So it's a big challenge.
Financial advisor, financial analyst, a journalist, federal cabinet minister, now the owner of the old bank building in Lunenburg. Thanks for doing this, Garth Turner. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Anytime, Sheldon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Cheers. Garth Turner. And no, throwaway comment. That's what happens. You throw away a comment like Hipster Cafe, and all of a sudden, everybody's hating. Everybody's hating. That's a song, isn't it? No. All right, we're done. All done for today. We're going to hear more, obviously, about Trans Mountain. We're going to hear more about what's happened in and around HRM today. That's your All News Afternoon coming in just a few moments. Tomorrow, producer Matt, it's the Wheel of Topics. And it's AMA. Ask me anything about Rick Howe. We should answer those tomorrow. We'll get in trouble for that, won't we? You think?
If we're lucky.
Okay. Big thanks to producer Matt Brand. What's your Twitter handle? Matt_Brand?
M_Brand.
I wasn't even close. I did say underscore.
You got my last name in there. That was nice.
Oh, that's cool. All right. All News Afternoon is next. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you next time.